Welcome to the Misfit Stars podcast. I'm Shannon Curtis.
And I am Jamie Hill. Hello, everyone, and hi, Shan.
Hi, Jamie.
How you doing?
I'm pretty good.
Good. Man, what a week.
What a week.
Yeah, totally. We'll get there. Hey, welcome, everyone, to episode 27 of the Misfit Stars podcast.
Yeah.
Wow, lucky episode 27. It's like three cubed.
Like they always say, three cubed. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, right? Pretty significant. If you're into numbers, hey, big deal.
Math nerds unite.
Yep, pretty much. Hey, everyone, thank you for being our new listeners and thank you for being our new supporters, those of you to whom each of those apply. We've had a couple of each this week.
Thank you.
It's neat. We got our podcast statistics the other day.
Which I always have a hard time, like, discerning.
No,
They're just a bunch of numbers.
No, these are different ones.
Oh, okay.
No. We get this. I have this one thing installed on the Misfit Stars. It's just like a little WordPress site, right? MisfitStars.com is just WordPress. And we have this little plugin installed that's just like a statistics tracker, and it sends me an indecipherable email every morning. And it's like, and it just is like listeners and listens, and the numbers vary wildly and seem to be related to nothing, and I just don't get it at all.
None of it makes sense.
And there's no context. There's only like three words. It's like total listens, colon, and a number. Total listeners, colon, and a number. And then that's it. And it's like, what? What are you talking about? What does it even mean?
It doesn't mean anything.
No.
Nothing means anything.
This is different.
Oh, okay,
this
good.
Is super different. We have this new thing from Blueberry, the people who like put the podcast out in the world for us, and it's called like listener completion statistics.
What?
We are like, so it tells you how many downloads there were, and they can tell apparently now with this new technology with a high degree of accuracy.
Like Big Brother.
They call it, I think in quotes, like ridiculously accurate or something.
Okay.
On their own website. It's wonderful. Uh-huh. And it's very Big Brother-ish. But they can tell like if someone stopped listening 25% of the way through, 50, 75, or if they listen to the whole thing. We are like at 99.17% at 100% listens.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Right? Like, of the people who listen to the podcast, 99.17% of them listen all the way through.
So chances are really good that if the person who's hearing my voice right now is going to hear me say goodbye at the end of this podcast.
I mean, it's 99.17% chance.
I'd throw some money down on that odds, those odds.
And I feel bad because like we're totally putting to shame all the podcasts that we love and listen to. Like Pod Save America could be taking tips from us on how to do an engaging, fun podcast.
Doubtful. That's really cool.
You know that John Love is listening to this right now? Like, those guys are pretty engaging. To be fair, they're pretty engaging.
Thank you so much, you new listeners and new supporters.
Yeah, super cool. If you're listening to this and you are not a supporter of the podcast, please consider becoming one. It's just another little way to support what Shannon and I do in the world. And, you know, as with most of our weird crowdsourcing things that we do with our lives, it's not on one person. It's not like we have a mega donor who gives us $5,000 a month. I mean, first of all, if we got $5,000 a month to do the podcast, holy cow, we're not there.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, what we do instead is we ask a whole bunch of people, hey, you got $5?
Do you like what we're doing? Do you want to support it and make it continue in the world?
Yeah.
That's what this is all about.
That's right. It's like internet panhandling. But like we give you something for it. It's nice. So,
No.
Yeah. So here's the deal. If you want to become a supporting member of the podcast, just go to misfitstars.com. Click on the second big pink button and it will take you to the place where you can sign up and thank you. And hey, here's another thing too.
What?
If you love the podcast, if you are a person listening right now and you're like, yeah, I've been listening for a long time. I really do love this podcast. Do us a favor, go to the place where you listen to it and give us a 5-star review.
Oh yeah.
Go to iTunes.
Yeah. Reviews.
Are there even other places where you can review podcasts?
I don't know.
You'd think I would have done my homework. You'd be wrong.
That's okay.
Yeah. Go to iTunes. That's a start.
That would be great. Thank you.
I think it may actually help in some way.
We have some, I think it might too. We have some really cool things coming up in this podcast.
Yeah, we do.
Before we get to what we got into this week.
You want to tease it?
I want to tease it.
Okay.
I'm going to tease y'all because we finished the new record a little over a week ago.
Yeah.
And
in our world is like a month ago.
Yeah, it's been
been expanding.
This week has been the longest month. But so the record's done. It comes out June 14th. However, for our Misfit Stars members, supporting members,
mm-hmm.
we're going to, over the next few weeks, start teasing, exclusively premiering songs from the new record only for our Misfit Stars members. And so later in this episode, when it gets into the members only section of things.
Yeah. Right when it gets juicy and then it fades out and we do the pitch.
Uh-huh.
After that.
Yeah. When that happens, we're going to be debuting a couple of new songs that nobody outside of this studio has heard yet.
No one.
Yeah.
And I think maybe just you and me.
You and me and Chris Palmer, who played guitar on
Palmer.
A lot of the tracks. So we're going to do two new songs that nobody's heard today in the second half of the podcast. I'm very excited to reveal them to you.
Yeah, it's going to be really cool.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about them. Shannon will talk about like her motivations for writing them.
Mm-hmm.
I will talk perhaps about some of the fun Sonic stuff that mm-hmm. like happened.
Cool.
It's going to be really
neat. It's going to be great. Cool. Yeah.
So just heads up on that. So basically, here's the deal. If you're listening to this and you're not yet a supporting member of the podcast,
you
and you're
do
like,
that.
Wait a minute, I need to hear this. It's real easy. Just go to misfitstars.com. You can hit pause right now. Just go ahead. Go join up.
We'll wait.
Okay, you done? I'm imagining they like put us on pause and then unpaused.
I hope so.
That'd be cool. Imagine if somebody actually did that. That would be perfect.
That would be so good. Yeah. Let us know if you did that. So yeah, you go make it.
Oh, hey, speaking of let us know if you fill in the blank.
What?
Another thing that I would love to know is who sent us those t-shirts?
We've been failing to talk about this. Okay,
oh, yeah.
So here's the deal. A number of weeks ago now. I mean, we were in the like the height of our busy season.
Yeah.
And so we got a package in the mail.
It was like a month ago.
Like a month or more ago.
Maybe.
With two t-shirts in them. Addressed to Jamie and Shannon, Misfit Stars.
At our home address.
At our home address, which we don't really give out.
We don't publicize that. We have like another address that we put out in the world.
P.O. Box. So like, we have no idea who sent these t-shirts to us. So if you're listening to this and you're like, I sent them those t-shirts and they haven't said thank you. We don't know who you are.
We've been trying. We've been trying to figure it out. We asked all of our neighbors and that's
neighbors,
who we would think like would know.
Yeah. I mean, there are maybe
couple friends.
Few other friends who might know our home address and I just don't know. So the t-shirts are really cool, by the way. They say love thy neighborhood, which is so wonderful.
And
it's like
cool
fits in
looking.
With the whole, you know, like fight that our neighborhood's been engaged in and all that kind of stuff.
That's why we thought it was one of our neighbors, because we're all banding together to fight these a-hole developers.
Yeah.
You know?
So if that's you, if you sent us the t-shirts,
fess up.
Let us know.
It's killing us.
It is.
We have all this frustrated gratitude that we want to unleash upon you.
Yes. So please do that. That would be fun to know who you are.
They're really cool t-shirts too. They have like a big sans serif font. You know, the design of them is really good.
Neighborhood.
Yeah. Real it's chunky so and assertive.
I love it. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Great. So
anyway, yeah. Fess up. Thanks. Thanks for the t-shirt. Mystery t-shirt giver.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of a cool thing to do, just send someone random t-shirts, but also, what the hell?
I know.
Like,
no.
You'd think they'd want us to know. Like, you'd think that they would want to get the
props,
frustrated
the thank
gratitude.
You.
Yeah.
Well, the unfrustrated gratitude.
Yeah. In that case.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Weird behavior, but cool. Very cool. But weird, but cool.
Okay, moving on now.
Yeah. All right. So, hey, what did we get into this week?
What did we get into?
You know, a lot.
It has been a week. The week has been like, felt like a month.
Yeah.
We finished the record last like Monday, right?
Turned it in and everything.
Turned it. We did the artwork.
Yep.
We submitted it for CD replication.
Mm-hmm.
Replication.
Duplication is like when you burn a CD.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Replication is when a machine stamps them out.
Right. So we did all that. They are in the plant right now being mm-hmm. printed.
Yeah.
That's very exciting.
It is. It's always so exciting and nerve wracking.
Yeah.
Because you get them back. And you have 1,000 of them and you take them out of the thing and you put it in and it's like, what if we screwed something up? And you look at the artwork and it's like, what if we screwed something up?
Yeah. Well, with the artwork, we tend to always screw something up. Like I remember one year we had a special thanks to one of our special thanks supporters and we spelled her name wrong.
It was the first time we ever did it. It was the first year.
Bad.
It was on CinemaScope.
When we did the reprint, we actually did a whole new reprint so that we could get her name right on the second reprint of the CD.
Seriously, we ate like $300 on that.
So that we could make her name right.
Because we are honorable like samurai.
That's right.
You know, we could have just done the regular reprint. No one would ever have known. And they keep the artwork, like film or whatever and just recycle it. And we're like, no, we're making completely new artwork.
Yes.
Just for this to correct
change.
A five-letter first name.
Yes, I know.
But it was important.
It was important to us because our friend Gail has been very supportive of us over the years and we wanted her name to be right.
Thank you, Gail. Thank you, Michael.
And I every year when she gives to our fundraiser, I make sure that her name is spelled right. Like I'm attuned to it
it's
now.
It's emblazoned on my brain.
But every year there's always some mistake. Like we always find like some like lyric mistake and we're like, oh,
this year
gosh.
As a result of that, I actually sat down and proofread the lyrics.
Yeah,
that's a thing we did.
I wonder if we'll still find something.
No, damn it. We will not, Shannon. We probably will.
It's very exciting to have them off.
Yeah.
And also all the t-shirt and tote bag orders are
Holy
in.
Holy cow.
They look so good. You all, we have a surprise coming for you. We have a new t-shirt design that nobody has seen.
That's right.
That we are bringing out on tour this year. And we're so excited about this t-shirt. So that's in.
It's killing.
Along with the fundraiser t-shirts.
Who switches t-shirts midstream? We do.
We do. That's right.
Yep.
We did that.
Pretty cool.
What else?
We sent the record off to Capitol. That's exciting.
Capitol for vinyl mastering.
Our genius vinyl cutting mastering engineer there, Ian Sefcik.
He's so great.
He's so wonderful.
Yep.
Wonderful human being, amazing musician. He was in a band called Creeper Lagoon that I was maybe the biggest fan of. Or maybe my sister was the biggest fan. Between me and my sister, we were the biggest fan, for sure, of Creeper. And gosh, they were so great. And he was the main writer for that and the guitar player. He was one of those just amazing, weird, savant type of guys. Like, he built all of his own guitar stuff. Not the guitar itself. That was like some just, you know, Fender or whatever. But like, he built his own amplifiers. He built his own power soaks.
Cool.
He built his own pedals. He just has this weird ability to look at an electronic circuit and be like, oh, this is what this does and this is how it does it and here's how I could make it better.
Which is probably why he was so well suited to uncover the historic lathe that cut the Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon and all the other famous records from that era at Capitol Records and restore it.
He found this thing like in my mind, it's like in Raiders of the Lost Ark when they go into that huge warehouse where the Ark of the Covenant is being stored. It's like that, but he unearthed it in an Ark of the Covenant-like way, restored it using his savant-like electronics knowledge to better than the original factory specification. And this being the machine that already, in its original factory state, cut some of the most iconic records in the history of time.
So are you saying that our record's being cut on the Ark of the Covenant?
That's essentially what I'm saying, Shannon. Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe what I'm saying is that the Ark of the Covenant was actually a lathe.
Ooh, maybe so.
Wouldn't it be cool if we opened up the lathe and inside there were like treasures and mysteries?
That would be cool. There probably are treasures and mysteries.
I mean, he would know. He took it apart to rebuild
it. So true.
He probably has a treasures and mysteries at his house.
He probably does. So he got it this week. That's fun. We'll have vinyl masters cut soon. And
we'll get the
reference discs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very fun.
Yep.
What else?
Well, we started talking with our filmmaker person.
That's right. So remember with the fundraiser, one of the levels that we funded in our fundraiser was that we were going to make a short film with a young student filmmaker.
Yep.
He's going to make a short film for one of the songs on the record. And we have started that process with him now. And we're still actually deciding what song to do. We came up with a short list of ones that were interesting to us. And we sent him the whole record, though, and kind of let him sort of listen and see what sparks some interest in him. And
like, let him know. We let him know, like, here's our two tops, here's a third, but here's the record. And if something just like sparks interest in him, I want to know about it. You know
too.
What I mean?
Me too.
Because he's creative as hell.
I'm so excited to get this going.
Bruce has a short film that he worked on this semester at school, debuting at a theater in Portland.
That's so cool.
And they're charging admission for it and everything. And it was a finalist in some like juried, like
festival?
New filmmaker, like festival thing.
Very cool.
So he has like little laurel wreaths on it.
That's so
on the poster
awesome.
He made. He's super good at the branding of all
writer and director of that film, right?
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Very, very, very cool. And I assume he's also the cinematographer because like he's just got this amazing eye and he shoots a lot of stuff. He actually works as a cinematographer and camera person on other people's films.
Very cool.
We saw one of them a couple days ago.
That's a great way to learn too, to just to get as much experience as possible. If you're not the one in charge, you can kind of like sit back and like take more mental notes about a creative process and decide like what's working, what's not, what do I want to implement in my own workflow.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
It's the kind of mentorship sort of training that I never got, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm super keenly aware of how valuable it is.
That's very cool.
You know, because I never had that opportunity to sit in the room with like world-class amazing engineers, the people making the records of the day that are hitting number one on the charts and see how they do what they do. I never had that,
right,
you know?
Right,
And so like I think he's doing a great thing by like doing that kind of stuff.
Totally. Yeah. I'm excited to see what he comes up with.
I know,
we'll
totally.
Keep you abreast.
He's going to write a whole script for it.
It's going to be cool.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
Very excited about it.
So the big thing we did this week, the big chunk of our last week was we took this whirlwind trip to the East Coast.
Oh my gosh.
Which I remember when we put it on the calendar, we're like, okay, well, we should be done with the record by then.
We have to
We should have all of our things done.
If we don't, we're in trouble.
For the most part, we had all our things done. We were still working on t-shirt orders while we were traveling.
Yep.
but
that was okay. That was just approving proofs. No big deal.
But we went to the East Coast because it was your 25th alumni weekend from Tufts University.
Wild.
What?
Wild behavior, being 46.
25 years ago, you graduated college. That's amazing.
And so the trip, so we went it's funny. So we turned in the record on Monday, like sort of later in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And like, we left, like we rushed to pack and we rushed to get everything done that we needed to get done and submitted what we needed to submit and packed, and we got in bed at 3:30
in the morning.
In the morning, and we had our alarm set for 4:30 in the morning.
So we could get to the airport for a 6:30 flight.
And I have to say, like, it really did help that we got in bed and went to sleep and were woken up by the alarm, just because it at least made it seem like 2 days.
Yeah.
Even like the second day was a tired day. That's okay. It didn't feel like a 48-hour long day, which sometimes otherwise days like that can feel like, and it's just disorienting and weird.
But the cool thing is that we slept on the plane, and that's like magic, right? Yeah. When you're able to sleep on the plane and you go to sleep as the plane's taking off, and then like, you shake your head awake when the pilot says we're going to be landing soon. And we're like, hey, that 5 hours went by actually pretty fast.
Yeah.
It was really perfect.
It was really cool. And it was a direct flight to Boston, which was cool. I haven't flown into Boston for a long, long time. I mean, I used to live there and that was my home airport.
Yeah.
And that was also a home airport for some of the stuff that we did when I was a kid, only because, I mean, there was Burlington's little airport. And it has better connecting service now, but like in the early 80s,
it's
still
tiny.
It was regional at best, you know? And we lived, you know, 2 hours and 20 minutes from Logan. That's Boston's airport. When I was a kid, so we could just like, we could either drive an hour north to Burlington and deal with a stupid connecting flight, or just fly the extra, drive the extra hour to Boston and then just fly directly.
Yeah, of course.
And so we always did that. And the airport looks totally the same. It's just like one of those classic East Coast rabbit Warren.
I thought that when we got off the plane, I'm like, this just feels like stepping into the 1970s. Right
Now. It's the kind of airport where everything feels underground, even the above ground levels. Just subterranean and Warren-like.
Yes, but it was really fun. We tacked on like a day and a half to the first part of our reunion trip so that we could bust up to Vermont and see your family for a couple days, like for like literally like a day and a half.
So we slept on the plane for 5 hours, rented a car, had it reserved, got in our rental car and drove like 3.5 hours up to Burlington, Vermont. The last hour of which I probably should not have done.
Oh, that's scary.
Yeah, but you know, like there's no cars around you if you're driving at 9:30 at night on a Monday or Tuesday night in Vermont. There's just no one on the roads. It's still a very sparsely populated state.
You were more tired than you actually let on to me when we were
driving. Yeah, a little bit. But I also like, I wasn't swerving. Like I wasn't finding myself falling asleep or anything. It wasn't like that.
Got it.
I just felt so like painfully tired to the point where it was hard to concentrate.
I know.
But I have gotten so good over the years at driving, basically just using my brainstem.
Your reaction time probably wouldn't be so awesome. I've done that too. And it's scary to think back on drives I used to do when I was touring by myself. And like, actually, there was one of the worst times was one of the drives I made from like Boston to Burlington myself.
Yeah.
And I was so tired. Like, I don't know how I got through. And it just isn't smart.
And the roads up there are extra dark. Like, they're really sensitive in Vermont about like light pollution and visual pollution in general. Mm-hmm. So there's no billboards. There's no lights on the side of the road. There's none of that stuff. You're just out in the dark with nothing and nobody else.
So that was probably not smart. But we had a great time with the family.
It was really
great time to hang out with the kids, our nieces and nephew, and your sister, and our brother-in-law. And
yeah, it was all good. It was quick, but it was like action-packed.
It was action-packed. And then we got back to Boston for the real action.
Yeah. Drove back down. So we drove down to Boston a day early, like half a day early on Thursday. We got there like in the afternoon, dropped off our stuff at our Airbnb, which we'll get to, which is amazing. And then, and they were really cool. They let us get in early to drop off our stuff. Super cool. And then we drove sort of a back way down some roads I used to haunt when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Showed Shannon the place where we used to rehearse. In that classic way with cities that are booming, they tore down the music rehearsal building and turned it into condos.
Yeah.
I mean, it just happens everywhere, right? Yeah. Happened in Boston, happened to all the spaces in San Francisco. It's happening in Seattle. That's the way it goes. So, you know, showed her the condos, which was nice. And then dropped off the car. And then at that point, we were just on foot on the train and we had a date.
We did have a date. It was so fun. We walked downtown. There's the Revolutionary Trail in Boston, which I've done before in like the heat of the summer many years ago in another lifetime.
Yeah.
It's just fun to be sort of on the trail. We didn't do it like intensely, but we were like kind of sort of following the trail and you get to see some of those historical sites.
Well, you're getting ahead. First thing we did is we started in the North End.
Oh, I'm sorry. We had dinner first. But no, the trail was, I was there. The North End is on the trail. It's part of the deal.
That's true.
We were there.
That's true.
So we had the best Italian food ever. Like, I'm serious. The Caprese salad we ordered, It's the best mozzarella I've ever had in my life.
It was good.
So freaking good.
No, it's good.
I wanted to just keep eating and eating. My body's like, please stop eating. And I'm like, no, I have to keep eating. It was really great though.
It was wonderful.
It was so.
We were in the basement of this little place. Like, yeah, they had just added more seating by like making a tiny dining room in their basement.
Yeah, it was so, so good. If you're going to Boston, let us know and we'll tell you this restaurant we went to, because I would go back in a heartbeat. It was so fantastic.
Yeah, it was great. Kind of on a little side street.
Loved it.
But packed and awesome and great.
Yeah.
And then just wandered around. We went to an old, old favorite place of mine, a place I've been going to since I was a kid for like gelato.
That's right.
And they have espresso and we had some cappuccinos there and that was really cool. And then we just
walked and walked and walked and walked.
Yeah, it was great.
It was so great.
The whole nighttime thing. Like, we started at like 8 at night and like we walked until about midnight.
Yeah, my feet did not think it was so great the next day. Yeah. But it was so fun. It was a beautiful night. Mm-hmm. I posted a bunch of pictures on social media about, from our walk that night.
Yeah.
It was so beautiful.
I walked Shannon through Government Center so she could see City Hall, the amazing brutalist City Hall that they have there.
It's very cool. And it was really neat.
And
really
then we walked through a bunch of the old Freedom Trail stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is that what it's called? Freedom Trail?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was called Revolutionary Trail.
No, it's a Freedom Trail.
I'm all wrong.
Yeah.
But I have revolution on my mind.
Are they called Revolutionary Fries, Shannon? No, they're called Freedom Fries.
Oh my gosh.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
So, we walked by a lot of the stuff, couldn't go in because of the late hour.
Sure.
So then we saw the amazing graveyard and we saw all the amazing buildings. And then we walked up by the edge of the common and saw the State House.
Mm-hmm.
And then I walked you through Beacon Hill.
It was very pretty.
Shannon had never seen it before. And the architecture up there is stunning.
Yeah, it was really cool.
It was really, really, really cool. And then we ended up, we walked all the way down. We walked through the common. I showed Shannon the spot where I had seen Gene Wilder when I was a kid. Which, when you're like a kid and you see the dude who played Willy Wonka just passing you in Boston Common, it's like, wait a minute.
That's pretty cool.
That was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Walked all the way down the Back Bay as far as Mass Ave.
This doesn't mean anything to anyone who doesn't know Boston. I was there 3 days ago and all the directions you're saying right now don't mean a thing.
I love it. Well, hey, people, follow along on the map.
Here's the Cliff's Notes. We walked all over Boston.
It was wonderful.
And it was really wonderful.
And then we got on a bus from there and went through Harvard Square, mm-hmm. which was really fun. And then switched there to a train, took it one stop up to Porter, and then walked all the way up, further up Mass Ave toward Arlington, and stopped in at the wine bar owned by the guy who played lead bass in the band that I was in like 25, 26, 27 years ago.
It was really fun to get to meet him.
Amazing.
And his awesome wife.
When I knew him, his name was Joe, because his name is Xavier Joseph Dietrich, right? But he just went by Joe, because I think when you're a kid, Xavier's a lot. So he went by Joe, sort of a short version of his middle name. And that's how I knew him. Well, I mean, for the last like 20 years, a few years after he and I parted ways, told him, your name's Xavier? You need to go by Xavier. And he's like, okay. And he's been going by Xavier for like 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got to reconnect and it was amazing. And it's weird like meeting someone with a different like name than you're used to, you know, because I know him as Joe, but he's not Joe.
Yeah, but it's interesting to me because you haven't seen him in like 20 years or more, right? But like people change in a big way from, say, well, he's older than you, but you were in your 20s when you last saw him and now you're in your 40s. Like you've changed a lot. Like in some ways, it might be nice to have like a new name for the new you.
That's interesting.
Like, I often wonder like, when you sort of like as an adult get to the place where you sort of like start choosing your own life.
Yeah.
You know, what if we had this ritual where we got to choose our own names? Also,
yeah,
wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah,
like
seriously.
We kind of like become the person that we are choosing to be in our adult lives.
Well,
like,
we know people who have done that.
Yeah.
Our buddy Wonder has done that.
That's true.
Wonder's not her given name.
That's true. Absolutely true.
Yeah, but she needed a new name for the new her.
I love it.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
What would mine be?
What would yours be?
You
think on that.
Yeah, right. I'm still just getting comfortable with the idea of the name Jamie. Like, I'm okay with it. I've heard from people that like Jamie Hill is a pretty good name actually, but like I've always thought it's just a dumb name.
Hmm. I think probably a lot of people don't like their own names.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was
not the most reassuring. Huh.
Really fun.
Like, what you should have said is, no, it's a great name, sweetheart.
It's a great name.
Thanks.
You've
got a legit great name.
What does it matter?
Shannon Curtis, that's a strong name.
But I've always not really particularly liked the name Shannon.
Really?
Yeah. Because when I was a kid, the only other... No, I knew two Shannons growing up. One was a girl Shannon, one was a boy Shannon. And I'm like, I have a boy's name.
Yeah.
So, yeah, whatever. Whatever. Yeah. I think probably people always struggle sometimes with their... And what does it matter?
It's no, just the not thing much. That...
Yeah.
I've made peace with it. Yeah. If by making peace, you mean just kind of giving up and being like, well, it's my name.
It's right.
I'm used to it.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah.
So... Date night was fun.
Date
getting
night
to
was
know
wonderful.
your old bandmate was really fun.
Yeah. And his wife are fighting City Hall in the coolest way.
It is very
which
cool.
Which is sort of similar to how we're fighting. Like, they're fighting much harder.
They discovered some, like, seriously, like, long-standing corruption in the Cambridge City Hall.
Like,
in
literally
terms of,
going
like,
back.
Liquor like, licenses.
Going
and
back
things.
4 decades.
Yeah. And they're fighting it. It's pretty awesome.
Kim's a lawyer. She has a background as a lawyer. And so, like, she actually knows how to fight this stuff for real. And it's just rad.
But she's fighting it at the same time as running a newish small business, which is just a lot to deal with.
Like us, they work 7 days a week. Totally get it.
Yep, totally.
It's an amazing place, though. They're in the basement of a VFW hall, which is wild.
It's cool.
Yeah, it's so cool. It's like stepping into someone's, like, some cool uncle's den from, like, the 70s.
Yeah, it was neat.
Yeah.
Date night was amazing. And we got to our Airbnb, which was not amazing. I mean, amazing in the way that it was, like, not an awesome place.
Yeah. I was amazed. That's not how I usually use the word amazing.
Yeah.
It was a dump.
Let's just say this. It was a great deal.
Yeah. Hey, and there's a place in the market for stuff that's crappy and inexpensive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We didn't need something good. We needed a place to sleep and shower.
It was clean enough.
Yep.
And it was 2 blocks from your old campus.
Which
and
is rad.
Those ticked boxes that needed to be ticked, and it was great. But we got our night of sleep, and then the next day, the whole reason for our trip sort of began the following day.
Yeah.
Which I'm excited to hear you talk about.
Yeah. So the reason for the trip, right? So the reunion weekend was... not the primary reason we went, right? Like, it was the container and the framework for a reconnection of my peer group from college.
Mm-hmm.
So just a tiny bit of context. When I was a senior, I lived in a big 5-bedroom house with 5 other women.
Mm-hmm.
The reason it was 5-bedroom, not 6-bedroom, is because I was there with my college girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
We were 1-bedroom, then there were 4 other bedrooms. And it was amazing, me and 5 women. Like, I've always preferred the company of women, and I was kind of one of the girls all through college.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's my preferred place anyway, you know, because
mm-hmm.
women are awesome. No offense, guys. So, but you know. So we were like this really, really tight group. We roamed as a pack kind of everywhere. It wasn't just like a random living situation. We had all been friends since freshman year,
mm-hmm.
you know? And there was like a second friend layer of people who didn't live with us, but who might as well have because they were at our house like 5 to 7 nights a week, you know?
Yeah.
And that second layer of friends was part of this adventure this last weekend also, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was 12 of us all told, and there were only a couple of spouses. Shannon was one spouse. Andy, Sarah Sue's. We had a couple of Sarahs, right? So you'll hear me refer to Sarah Jane. That was my girlfriend. And Sarah Sue. Because you couldn't just say Sarah, because 2 people would be like, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So we called them Jane and Sue, right? Mm-hmm. Or Sarah Jane, Sarah Sue, whatever. So Sarah Sue brought her husband, who's wonderful. We've met him a number of times before, and he's just a rad guy.
Mm-hmm.
I brought Shannon, but that was it. Like, no one else brought spouses. Our friend Melissa, like, she's local, and so her husband came and joined, like, on the second day.
Right.
You know, just because he was there and could drive over. So it was 12 of us, and so we all met for the first time for sort of like a late breakfast, coffee shop.
And you should say, like, most of these people you haven't seen since college.
Yeah, right. That's
like,
a very important point.
There were a few people that you've stayed in touch with over the years.
Yep.
And have seen, you know, a few of them here and there
mm-hmm.
Over the years. But the vast majority of this group you hadn't seen at all since you all graduated.
Yeah, I know. It's wild, right?
Right.
I've seen Sarah Sue a number of times, and we've kept in constant touch. We see Jen, like, at least once a year, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, like you said, the rest of them, like, some of them I haven't even talked with in, like, 25 years.
Right.
I mean, just because, like, we went different ways, and there was no internet then, and, like, it's just, you know.
That's what
things happen. Yeah, life moves on.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? So a significant thing in all of that is, like, one very significant person who I had not seen
mm-hmm.
in the last, like, almost, I hadn't seen in 20 years and hadn't talked with in about 18 years, is my college girlfriend, my first love, Sarah Jane,
mm-hmm.
right? And I mean, like, when I say college girlfriend, like, we were together for 8 years. We were together from the end of freshman year until, like, we were both 26 years old.
Right. You moved to San Francisco together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a whole thing.
It was a significant relationship in your life?
Significant relationship in my life. I mean, the first one, like the most significant relationship until you, you know?
Right.
And
you hadn't talked with her in 18 years.
And I hadn't talked with her in 18 years, right? And so, and we can get into that.
Was it 18 years? You talked with her right after you got sober because you made an amends to her early
on.
Yeah,
but I think it might have been over email.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I can't recall. I'm pretty sure it was just over email.
Lots of time passed, though, between you and somebody very significant in your life.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. Like, and we had just gone like really different ways, you know? And it's funny, in my mind, so it's a whole thing. So like... In my mind, like as I was getting sober and as we were parting, like we parted ways and I didn't get sober for like 5 years after that, right? So we tried to do the whole thing, like here's how I remembered it, right? Is that we tried to do the whole let's be friends when we're broken up thing because we were always amazing friends. Like we really generally like each other a lot and have similar senses of humor mm-hmm. and or compatible sense of humor, you know, just enjoy each other's company.
Right.
And so like I thought, like my memory of it at the time was that like we broke up and we tried to be friends, but then she wasn't so interested and kind of pulled away. And so I recall feeling sort of abandoned, sort of left in the lurch by that, you know, kind of like, well, fine, whatever was my feeling about it.
Right.
And then of course, you know, then I had some more like pre-sobriety stuff to do, you know? And then I got sober, in 2004, which was like 5 years after we broke up. To within a month, you know, from her leaving, I got sober. Mm-hmm. She left in May and I got sober in June. And so, you know, pretty quickly after that, like 6-8 months afterwards, I was already into my first amends process, you know, working the steps in AA. And the deal with that is like you identify people who you feel some negative interaction with or resentment toward, you know, something didn't go right, whatever, something you're carrying mm-hmm. that's not positive. And you figure out what your part in that interaction was. And then you reach out to the person and you A, apologize to them for it in an unconditional, sincere way, identifying only what you did and what you feel responsible for. And mm-hmm. then B, the amends part is that you then, you know, just ask what you can do to make it better, right. you know? And I remember vaguely remember reaching out to her for that. I think it was over email, maybe. I can't recall. Mm. It probably was over email only because I don't know that I felt at the time like there was a real open door to talk on the phone. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so I did that and I recall it being received fine, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. but it didn't lead to like any
reconnection or anything like that.
Not really, mm-hmm. you know. And so I just kind of thought that she had written me off and I was inventing all these reasons in my head why that might be the case. You know, I had like my whole own narrative going about it in which I was maligned and in which she was doing me wrong, you know, in sobriety, mind you, right?
Right. But still, even in sobriety, like we humans tend to think of ourselves as the heroes of our own stories always, right? Like...
Man, that's a mistake. That's our first mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's understandable is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Thanks. I appreciate that. You know, and I understand like our brains work against us all of the time, you know? Mm. And so that's just sort of the story I was carrying with me. And so as we were approaching this, like the way it kind of structurally went down is that Sarah Sue was the instigator of this big group adventure, this mm-hmm. big 12-person group adventure. And she started it all with a Facebook group. She started a Facebook group with like, you know, the 10 of us minus the spouses on it. And she and I was on there and Sarah Jane was on there. And so all of a sudden, like I was on a Facebook
a
group.
Thread with your ex-girlfriend that you haven't talked with in 18 years.
Yeah.
Oh, no!
Yeah, I know, right? And feeling sort of fraught about it. And like, and it's funny, the entire time leading up to this, like uh-huh. this last weekend, we were on the same thread, interacting on the same stuff, often sequentially with one another. Or sometimes responding to each other's things, but never addressing the other.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Like we never
talked. Tangentially talking yeah. around the same things in the yeah. same group.
Mm-hmm. And with and next to one another, but not with each other.
Right.
You know?
And were you feeling anxious?
Of course I was a little bit,
coming
you know?
Over the weekend?
Yeah. yeah. You know, I feel like I was at a place that was not exactly anxious with it, almost like post-anxiety, like acceptance, curiosity, you know, but like an understanding that maybe it wouldn't be cool. Like maybe like I didn't know where she was at all. I had absolutely no framework for even guessing where she was at vis-a-vis me or if she was even anywhere. You know what I mean?
Right.
She could have been like, fuck him like 15 years ago, but like, and that could have mellowed into it, whatever,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been understandable and okay with me. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But then there we both we're going to be, you know? But coming into this weekend, like we literally hadn't talked. We hadn't had a sidebar conversation. I had considered reaching out and being like, hey, you know, I'm super excited to see you. But then I was just like, let's just let it be what it is. And let's not dissipate any of that energy.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Let's just sort of like let it just be what will be in the moment and not try to like get out ahead of it.
So how'd it go? I mean, I was there.
Yeah. You know what? It went amazing. It went absolutely better than I could have hoped it would, I think. Mm. Certainly as well as, and probably better. Mm. It was really, really cool. And so the first thing I did is I took the opportunity to make a proper amends to her. You know, like I made a proper amends in my 8 months or whatever of sobriety, you know, in late 2000. I recall it being me. I think I was home at my parents' house for the holidays when I did this. So it must have been like 6 to 7 months of sobriety, because I recall it being like right around New Year's, like late 2004, early 2005.
I remember
doing it on my parents' computer, because I used to use my parents' computer before I had my own.
So I'm sure that felt like, oh, I've been sober for a really long time at that time. But like you've done a lot of growing since then, a lot more introspection since then, in the like almost 15 years since then.
I'm a completely different person.
Yeah.
And you know, I think I shared a little bit about this on last week's podcast, but just to kind of reiterate and amplify upon it a little bit, you know, so I had a certain perspective, and I feel like it was a pretty limited perspective in late 2004 about like what I had to make amends for, like what my part in that was, you know, a sort of limited understanding of her and her needs and my relationship with that, you know? Mm-hmm. So then I met you a few years later, and then you and I have had this like really good, healthy, very intentional relationship for like the last 13 plus years now, right? Mm-hmm. And like, it's been intentional from square one. I mean, literally one of the first things you and I ever talked about was like sobriety stuff, you know, like literally, I mean, like one of the first, in the first minute and a half of the first conversation you and I ever had, I was like, cause I had this compulsive need to tell everybody about it at the time, because it was one of those really defining things in my life. Like, look, you're either down with this or you're not. And I need to know immediately.
Right. You know? Honestly, that the fact that you were in, that you were in recovery was one of the biggest reasons why I wanted to keep talking with you that night. Like that was,
Well, and something I had learned very quickly in my early sobriety was that like being out about it was really good, because it very quickly, like people who were excited about that, that was great and exciting to me. And those are the people I wanted to attract to me, you know?
Right.
So I just put it out there.
Sure.
And so like, you know, I had said to you immediately, like, I'm 2 years sober in AA and I'm single, and you're like, and I'm recently single and 1 year sober, and like we bonded over that, and that set a foundation that continues to this day. It's very solid, very firm structure for how you and I interact with each other.
Yeah.
You know, like a really, really intentionally healthy framework.
Right.
Like we don't let bad communication happen. I mean, it'll happen, but we don't let it linger. We identify
fester.
It immediately. We don't let it fester. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and we figured out how to evolve with each other in a really healthy way as a result. Mm-hmm. And so now that I've had like a really long-term relationship, like 8 years is long-term, but like 8 years, especially when you're a kid, it's long, but it's also not long, because you're a different person every two of those years. So it's almost like resetting. It's like,
sure.
It's like I had 4 2-year relationships with the same person. You know what I mean?
Because
like, you're just so different then.
Yeah.
And so what I've realized in the 13 years of my relationship with you is what a healthy relationship actually feels like, you know, and what it feels like for me being on like the giving end of my half of it, you know, and what it feels like to be a good partner for somebody.
Right.
And to not think about yourself first all of the time.
Right.
And to look out for someone else's interests as though they were your own. And to care about someone else's welfare and well-being and goals as though they were your own. And, you know, the more I've gotten to understand what it's like to be in a healthy relationship, the more I've realized just how inadequate I was in my relationship with Sarah Jane, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because all of the things that I've learned, all these little sort of treasures that I've unlocked in this weird video game adventure I'm having with you, you know? It's like I go around a corner and there's like a little glowing thing and I grab it. Now I've unlocked that relationship achievement, you know? And now I will
coins.
Be a better listener. I got the better listener coin, you know?
I love it. That's a sexy game right there.
Right?
I love it.
Super, super sexy.
Someone, it really is, legitimately, actually.
Yeah. We've got some video game developer friends. Get on this, people.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just was so inadequate in virtually every single possible way. Like, I was a big gaping hole of need, and I was trying to fill it with Sarah, and I was expecting her main role in my life. And I don't even think that I was aware of any other thing in my life aside from the idea. Like, I knew I liked her and I loved her and like, you know, but like the actual practical on the ground manifestation and application, like what does love look like in action? You know, like what does that look like in the real world? It's not just an abstract thing that you say and then act like an asshole,
right?
It's a selflessness and it's a way of interacting with somebody that, that shows that you love them, you know? And I don't think I was doing very much of that at all, you know?
She was more of a hole filler for you.
Yeah, seriously.
Like this big gaping hole of need
that
she was a big part of helping to fill.
Yeah, I mean...
The whole Jerry Maguire syndrome, the you complete me syndrome. Seriously.
That's funny, yeah. Very much, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, the times when I felt the most complete, I think it was because I thought that, like, she was doing a good job at that. And the times I didn't feel complete, like, I had no introspective aspect to this at all.
Right.
There was no sense within me that, like, any of this was something that was my responsibility or my fault. Like, you know, and like, conversely, the stuff that felt like as we grew apart was the most painful and was the worst was me not accepting her changing. You know what I mean?
Right.
And especially like out of unhealthy behaviors and into healthy behaviors. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like when we met, like we were young, 18 and 19 respectively. And, you know, just kind of like the relationship was the foundational premise of the relationship was that we found each other attractive and that we were both super into smoking a lot of pot and taking drugs, right? And that we managed to extrapolate an eight-year relationship from that at all is
miraculous.
Sort of astonishing. Yeah, totally. But like she pretty quickly like started transitioning and growing into like...
out of those more childish things into other things.
Into a more like, you know, mature version of herself where she just like gets more comfortable with herself and learns what she actually likes to do. I didn't. I didn't at all. You know, in fact, I wanted to do more drugs and I wanted to drink more and I wanted to go further out there and she wanted to go less out there. And I was so resentful towards her about that. Like, that's not what I signed up for. I wanted someone who wanted to go like full Hunter S. Thompson with me. And she did not want that.
Right.
She just wanted, she explored all of that stuff a lot, but then like also sort of had an understanding that like, okay, she exhausted it for herself and I did not at all.
Right.
You know,
which is probably that sort of like divergence goes a long way to explain why ultimately you needed to find yourself in recovery. And she is not a person who needed that in her life.
Yeah.
Right. That just the way that you two are wired or the way that you were handling growing up.
Yeah.
Was different enough because of those like sort of elemental qualities about like how what your relationship was like with yourself.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, so as I was kind of, as our paths were diverging there, as she was kind of turning more into the first adult version of herself, like learning like, what do I like to do? Like she was getting into stuff like jewelry making, like toward the end of our relationship, she was making like stuff out of silver, sterling silver, you know, and little gems and stuff like that. And it was really neat. And she had like hobbies and things she enjoyed doing. And like my only hobby was like, like getting fucked up and listening to music. That was my hobby. That was it, you know? And I couldn't do it as much as I wanted because it was clearly less and less acceptable in context of my relationship, which again, very resentful, you know, because I was not being allowed to flourish and thrive in the way that I wanted to.
Very narrow hobby exploration.
I was not allowed to self-actualize in the way that I wanted to. And I was very, very upset about that.
Yeah. Well, when you broke up, you had all the opportunity in the world to self-actualize as much as you wanted. And that took you not down a good path.
I was literally drunk from the day she left until the day I got sober.
That's wild.
Every single day. There was not a day in there.
Wow.
Actually, that's not true. I tried. I did the classic sort of alcoholic, I'm going to quit on my own thing. I'm going to quit for 6 months. Every alcoholic tries to control their drinking at a certain point because they recognize that that's their way of not having a problem.
I can control this. I can stop anytime I want to.
Anytime I want to. See?
Yeah.
So I did a 6 month thing that was actually only five months in a week. And then I was lying to my friends for the last 3 weeks of it.
Oh.
Like drinking vodka instead of my preferred whiskey because I thought you couldn't smell it on your breath. Spoiler alert, you can.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And also I was doing cocaine and smoking a lot of pot.
Well, there you go. Yeah. So there's that.
There's that. But I wasn't drinking because drinking was the problem.
That was the problem.
Yeah. Methamphetamine wasn't the problem. I could do that still, you know? But I wasn't drinking. That's a big deal.
Right.
You know? So, you know, in context of this relationship, like I just, you know, looking back on it, like I'm shocked she even stayed with me like as long as she did. Mm-hmm. And I asked her about that, mm-hmm. you know?
Well, you haven't even gotten to the point where you asked how did it go when you first saw her. All preamble to that.
Yeah. Thanks for getting back on track. I appreciate that. So it went great. So I had a chance to make an amends for this specific suite of behaviors that, you know, at age 46 with a tiny amount of self-awareness, I can look back and recognize, right?
Right.
And so like I did that. It's a very first, like I said hi. I said it's amazing to see you. And then like literally the seats had been saved so that I was sitting next to her, and that was cool. And so I sat next to her, and like the literally first thing I did was like, can I talk with you for 1 second?
Yeah.
You know, and like I just made an immediate amends to her. Mm-hmm. Like I identified these specific things that I've just sort of been extrapolating, mm-hmm. you know, and I just expressed how much I understood how painful that must have been and how sorry I was for it, and mm-hmm. a sincere desire, if there's anything I can do to make it better, to do mm-hmm. so, mm-hmm. you know.
How did it feel to say those things to her face?
Oh, I mean, liberating, that's you know, cool. Because I've been carrying all this. It's not shame anymore. You know what I mean? I've forgiven myself for it. Like that's the most mm-hmm. important part. Like, mm-hmm. and I already made one amends to her and she took it on board and that was fine. But I've still like, I've been carrying just an understanding that this is a little thing that's not complete.
It's not. Know? Yeah. And, unresolved
yeah.
bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
A loose end.
Yeah, and I was okay with that because I knew there would come a time. I had faith and trust that there, you know, the time would come when I would get to do that.
Sure.
So I was never really stressed out about it.
And there are times when loose ends just remain loose ends too, because there are some times we just don't have control over tying them.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
and
so,
I've gotten better at letting go of that stuff too, sure. I think, you know? So yeah, you're right about that. You know, but to have a chance to do it, to tie it up, felt great to me.
Yeah.
And then also, like, she was not just receptive to it, but I think, like, I think that it was a loose end for her too,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Sure.
I feel yeah. I like she seemed so like excited and eager to talk about it, which mm-hmm. was really exciting and interesting to me. And like, and it led us down a series of conversations that didn't just like, so the way our friend group works is that our friend group that like when we were in college and apparently still now, because this is how this played out this weekend too, we roll as a pack and it's a large pack. It's like 8 to 12 people. It was always like 8 to 12 people. And all of us enjoyed each other's company equally and all had our own relationships with one another. So there was never a center to it. It's,
right.
It's not like with one person. You know, some friend groups, like there's like a ringleader and if that person's not there, it all falls apart and you don't hang out.
Sure. You can form as smaller groups within the group.
Yeah. So we just like constantly, like the way it plays out, like in real time, if we're all in the same place, is we just have a constant free-flowing conversation between subsets, and like
sure.
someone will turn or hear something and all of a sudden they're in that subset and like they're constantly reforming and shape-shifting. And so this conversation that Sarah Jane and I had didn't like just happen in one time because we got interrupted and other things happen. And like, so over the day, we were mm-hmm. there for 2 days, but she could only be there for 1 day because she's a Girl Scout mom now. Mm-hmm. And her daughter had a thing she had to do, like a Girl Scout thing. So she had to be back for that. So we only had the Friday. And so over the course of the Friday, we had like four separate, like between 2 and 25 minute conversations about this stuff. Like just taking like time as we could to like excavate our past together
mm-hmm.
and to talk about how things went down and what happened and what went wrong. Mm-hmm. And like, and it was so incredibly valuable for me. So incredibly valuable for me. I doubt it was as valuable for her because like she wasn't as screwed up the whole time because so she probably yeah. actually like she knew what was going on. But like for me, like with my faulty, biased, self-serving, alcoholic memory of how everything went down, you know, and the desperate need to fit her into my narrative that I was experiencing at the time, like to actually go back and hear what it was like from her perspective.
Right.
And to be able to take that on board, you know, like I'm sure she probably told me some of this stuff back in the day and I was absolutely unable to hear it.
Yeah.
You know, because it was an adversarial kind of thing at that time where like she was not fulfilling my needs and that was an absolute problem and deal breaker and it was not about me.
Right.
You know? But to be able to like hear her perspective on what happened and to be able to like and take that on board and really like readjust. It's weird. It's like a matrixy kind of thing where like something just kind of shifts and all of a sudden you see things for how they actually were.
Yeah.
You know?
Red pill, blue pill kind of thing.
Yeah, right, right. Seriously. But not in the weird alt-right way.
No, definitely not in that way. No, but like that there was this narrative, this story, the way that you shared it with me this weekend was the story I've been telling myself since, you know, all those years ago was this story that was very much a self-centered story. And hearing her perspective and being able to be in a place where you were open to hearing her side of the story just made the whole story, like, it changed the whole story for you. Yeah.
And, you know, the funny thing is, too, about that, like, the story that I had been telling myself in my brain about how things went down was actually making me feel worse about things.
Oh.
Because I was feeling wronged, and I was feeling like someone had let me down, and I was feeling like there were things that were happening to me, and I was a victim, right? Mm. It turns out that that wasn't actually the case at all. Mm-hmm. Actually, I was misbehaving and acting out and acting in really, like, clearly and obviously inappropriate ways towards somebody who took it for 4 years longer than they should have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. And, like, the net effect that that had for me was one of my brain trying to tell me victim stories. Because that's how your brain works when you're wired like me, is your brain tries to make you feel like a piece of crap so that I will give it alcohol.
Right.
Right. We need to create a set of conditions under which this guy will give me alcohol.
Right, right, right.
But she hasn't done in 15 years. What the hell?
And just what you're describing in this whole, like, sort of feeling like a piece of crap and also the self-centered nature. Isn't this exactly what they talk about in recovery when they say that, like, every alcoholic is like the piece of crap at the center of the universe?
Totally. Yeah. The biggest piece of crap the world ever revolved around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. And right, like, if I had actually had the correct narrative for how all this stuff sort of went down, me misbehaving, her having a perfectly natural human reaction to that, and her being the one who was wronged, by the way.
Right.
She was a victim in all of this. I mean, I don't want to assign victimhood to anybody, but,
sure,
like, I was misbehaving and it was at her expense.
Right.
Right? Right. I was absolutely not a good partner. She described a story that I didn't even remember until she told me it. I had a number of these happen this weekend, like, because I don't remember a whole lot from earlier in my life, like, just as a function of, like, all the drinking, all the drugs I did, like, all of that,
right,
and all the trauma I was experiencing at the time. I think I've had sort of a light, low-grade PTSD response to a lot of my life where I just have blocked it out.
Sure.
You know? And that's, you know, it is what it is. It's kind of fine, you know? But it's also really good for me to be able to reconnect with this stuff because I feel like a more whole person. The more, like, of these gaps in my memory and these little memories, micro memories, I'm able to sort of, like, remember and then also, like, come to terms and have some peace around, you know?
Yeah.
But one of the things she told me, so, like, when we first moved to San Francisco, we had shipped all of our stuff ahead of us in, like, a cube kind of thing on the back of a truck.
You're gonna tell this story, huh?
Sure, why not?
This is quite a story.
Yeah, right. So, I'm not embarrassed about any of this stuff. People know me.
No. There's no reason to be embarrassed. This is a gritty story.
It is a gritty story.
It's gritty.
So when we moved, we had shipped all of our stuff ahead. We got the kind of service where somebody comes to your apartment and they pack up all of your stuff into, like, a big cube thing. They put it on a truck and they ship it out to where you're going. And then when you go to pick it up, it's a different vendor and they charge you twice what they said they would. Side note. Oh, man. There was no internet back then. We didn't know anything, you know. So we had shipped all of our stuff ahead and we had driven across country with our cats in the car. And so, you know, we took a scenic route and we stayed with a friend in Los Angeles for a while. Shout out to Catherine Chen. And we eventually made it up to the Bay Area, to San Francisco, to start our new life there. And so we didn't have our stuff. We just had our suitcases and our cats, and we had to find jobs and a place to live. And we knew nobody, right? And so for the first, like, I don't know, 10 days or 2 weeks or something like that, we stayed in a really gritty, like, motel on San Pablo Ave in, like, Berkeley, which is still not great and was much less great,
right,
25 years ago,
right,
you know? And so when that money ran out, like, when our hotel money ran out, I had forgotten this completely. We stayed with, like, a friend of a friend of a friend.
A sketchy friend of a friend of a friend.
Oh, yeah. Like, I don't even remember what part of Berkeley this was in. I didn't ask Sarah to remind me. But, like, it was a part of Berkeley where, I guess, at the time, like, this guy had, like, cars up on blocks in his yard. Like, I don't even know a part of Berkeley now where you can do that. You know what I mean?
Right.
And apparently, so the first night we stayed with him, the guy's like, you know, we'd gotten settled in, we're chatting. He's like, hey, anyone want to smoke some crack?
Like you do.
Yeah, you know. And Sarah's like, no, please, we don't want to do that, you know? And so we didn't. And then we spent the night and went out the next day to, like, go look for jobs and a place to live and came back to this guy's house. And again, he's like, hey, anyone want to smoke some crack? And I was like, yeah. And Sarah said that in that moment, like, she was like, I've lost him. And I was just like, I didn't have any framework on that. Of course, to me in the moment, I was like, I want to be adventurous. I want to be William T. Volman. I want to be, you know, psychic adventurer, doing everything, having all of the experiences, right? And in her mind, she's like, the guy I just moved across the country 3,000 miles away, which before the internet felt like a lot further away. Like you couldn't just research it. There were no ties like that. It was like you were freaking gone.
It's
like,
a big deal.
It's a big deal. Like long distance phone calls cost a lot of money. You could like you couldn't just have these easy ties. Yeah. Like the world is much smaller now than it was then.
Yeah.
And you know, and I won't ever probably for the rest of my life forget what Sarah told me a couple of days ago about this. I was like, that must have been so scary for you. And she's like, you were my whole world.
And in that moment, she realized she had lost you.
Yeah.
And then she stayed with you for
4 years.
4 more years.
4 years.
When you told me that story, I felt it.
Yeah.
I can imagine what that feels like. That must have been a really, really hard, scary moment for her.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
But you hadn't remembered this at all.
No. Because like, why would I? Because apparently my brain blocks out all the stuff like for which I have any kind of culpability or responsibility. Mm-hmm. I mean, not now, you know what I mean? And also I keep short accounts now. So if I do something for which I need to make an amends, I do it immediately. It doesn't take 15 years. Right. You know?
That story really illustrates, I think, just the kind of the overall picture of things. Like the story you had told yourself looked like this. Getting to talk with her this weekend and being able to say, you know, that you were genuinely sorry for your part in how things went south. And then leaving an opening for her to fill in some of those blanks that you didn't even realize you had. That's really profound. Like, that's really, really profound.
It really was. And so there was this whole other aspect to it, too, which was just like, so when we, we can talk more about like the rest of the time with the friends, but to like really just to sum it up quickly, like it was, very jarring. So like we had, most of us haven't seen each other, right? We've seen Sarah Sue, seen Jen, but other than that, we haven't seen any of these people in like 25 years. They've, each of them and all of them, grown into an adult version of themselves that I really, really like.
Yeah, you know what really I mean? Awesome people.
I mean, sometimes like younger listeners, sometimes when people get to our age, they haven't turned out as well, right? like sometimes people just like, start to suck. I mean, you see that around you, you know? Sometimes like life is hard and sometimes it beats people down. They turn to like not great versions of themselves, you know?
Sure.
And that has not happened with any of our friend group. I mean, we're all just extraordinarily fortunate. I mean, everyone has tough stuff and we talked about the tough stuff that's happened in our lives and all of us have had it, but like it hasn't beaten anybody yet, you know? Mm. And like all these people are just like really cool, interesting people doing valuable things, bright-eyed, funny, interesting to hang around with, you know? And interestingly, like we all related to one another as well as, but differently than we related to one another like when we were kids.
Of course, because you're all 25 years older.
But like also, it still had all the same characteristics of how we hung out, which is to say that sort of shapeless, ever-shifting group of subgroups, you know, where we roll as a pack and we're 8 to 12 deep, but like any four of us hanging out can have like a super great and wonderful and intense time together, but any subset, you know?
It's really unusual that you all have that. Like I didn't bite into my college experience at all, really, especially compared to the experience that you had at your university. Yeah. I was very detached from mine.
Yeah.
But like, I think that even not considering my own, you know, sort of like outsider experience, it's really unusual to have that kind of connection with people over that length of time, even though, again, you haven't been connected, you know, individually with a lot of these people since then. But the fact that Sarah Sue sort of, you know, put this all together, I mean, it's super cool that she did that. But like that you were able to all come back and have something that you could reignite with one another. Yeah. Like that's neat. Not everybody has that. That's a very unique situation.
Well, absolutely. And I wasn't expecting it to be like this familiar feeling. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it felt, the term, I wrote a little thing about this and I'll just like excerpt some of it. But like this weekend in general felt like a jarring temporal dislocation.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And not in a negative way. Like it was all positive, but like the connection between all of us felt so immediate, so natural, but also updated to current, like immediately, like someone like did a software update and bam, it's a 2019 version, but like in a really bizarre but very healthy way. But like, none of it felt like anyone was trying to revert back to who they were or like relational patterns that they had 25 years ago. But yet it felt still instinctively comfortable.
That's cool.
You know, which is really weird. And so to be on that same ground that we all used to walk, roaming as a pack again, having the same freely flowing conversations with constantly shifting subsets of the group, it felt like it completely collapsed the intervening time between 1999 and now is what it really felt like for me. And it's just been messing with my head a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
Like it opened up a new parallel track in the multiverse where on the, in this other track in the multiverse, we've all just been hanging out this entire time uninterruptedly, you know?
Yeah.
And I just think I've been feeling a fundamental disconnect between how much time has passed and how little time it feels like has passed. And I haven't figured out a good way yet to resolve those two things.
Maybe both are true.
Well, that's it, right?
Maybe time is an illusion.
It really feels like it, you know? And so there's part of me right now that feels kind of like I'm just 26 again, or maybe 27, like a year's past or something, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, you and I don't have kids or real jobs. And so like we work incredibly hard, but it's not like we go to a desk. We don't have that structure, you know? And so, and we spend most of our time with each other. And so like you and I, like we're the least adulty adults I know.
Sure.
You know? And this is not helping with that. That feeling of just being like super young again, you know, I just really...
Do you mean like if you had like a super structured life to come back to after this trip, maybe you wouldn't feel so dislocated still?
I think it would place a finer point upon the fact that I really actually am a 46-year-old adult.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I mean?
You're like, maybe I'm still
27. Because, you know, if I had a real job, you know, at my age, I'd probably be like, what, a vice president or some random bullshit. You know what I mean? And I'd have to wear a suit and I'd have to have important conversations with people about the directions of medium-sized corporations.
Or if you were like taking your kid to soccer practice, your shift would be, well, that's interesting because like, you know, yeah.
There's nothing to root me in adulthood right now.
No.
You know? And I'm only tenuously rooted there at best.
Oh, no.
And it's fine. You know what I mean? Like, I have tools to process this kind of thing.
How about you pay some bills after we're done with this podcast?
Right? Yeah.
How about let's, like, think of adult things that you can do?
Oh, my goodness. Going to go get into a pointless argument with another 46-year-old about sports.
You can do that.
I can do that.
You can do that.
Oh, man. So, you know, it's just been super, super interesting. Like, I like that I am at a place in my life where, like, I can feel that there is this very bizarre temporal dislocation happening inside my head, but also that I can recognize in the same breath that it's okay. Mm-hmm. I don't have to process it all right now, that I am processing it, and that it's just another dimension. You know, but it's a really interesting one. Like I feel connected in a very healthy way to a younger version of myself. And that's a big deal for me because there are so many parts of my childhood to this day that I haven't found a way to connect back with. Mm-hmm. Visiting Randolph last summer was a huge, huge part of that. That's right. For me, that was a really big deal. This is a big deal in a similar way where I feel like like with Randolph, like so much of the stuff that I had remembered negatively or in a victim-y kind of way about that, like wasn't actually true.
Right. Right.
Right? And like it didn't hold the power of me that I thought it had and was actually a positive thing. And I'm so excited to go do more of that sort of excavatory work in my own life.
Yeah.
You know?
That's cool.
I don't know how really to create opportunities for that, but like I'm really into being present for them when they happen.
That's cool.
You know?
That's really cool.
Yeah. This felt like a really, I don't know.
A gift. You
know, a gift. Yeah. It felt like a gift. A big one though, you know, and one that I'm still processing and will give me a lot to like, to process for a while, which is cool.
That is cool.
You know?
Deep stuff, dude.
Deep stuff. So quickly, I mean, or at length, if you'd like to, like, what was your experience of this weekend?
I had so much fun. I, like, unreservedly, I had a great time. Like, I just loved getting to know each of your friends from back in the day. They were all so warm and welcoming and...
Yeah.
Maybe it's a bit of a function of social media that like each of them has seen into your world and just enough to get to know me a little bit. So we weren't complete strangers. Yeah.
But
you know?
Not all of them, like Heather's not on social media and you were walking arm in arm with Heather toward the end of the second night. I turned around. I was up with a different group of people just talking.
Yeah.
I turned around to see where Shannon is. And she's walking at the back of the group arm in arm with Heather.
Yeah. Because she offered me her arm because my feet hurt so bad. And it was very sweet. Yeah. No, I had a wonderful time. Like I felt, you know, I felt like I got to sort of like be a sort of an honorary member of a group of old college friends that I wasn't friends with back then. But like, you know what I mean? Like, I got
so
that
glad.
Feeling
I'm
of
so
that.
I'm so glad you had that experience.
It was so great. And Sarah Jane, your former partner,
yeah.
was so welcoming and warm toward me also. And I genuinely enjoyed getting to know her the little bit that I got to while we were together. She's just a sweet, sweet woman.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can see why you love her.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
like I get it. I totally get it. And it was all great. I just had a wonderful time. There's not much more to say. Like I
love it.
There's nothing more profound than that to say. It's just that it was a lovely, lovely time and glad we got to have it. Glad we got to share it together.
Yeah.
Glad I got to have a little glimpse of what your life was like in Boston all those years ago.
Yeah, and you really did, too. The fact that we stayed so near campus,
yeah.
like waking up in what felt like a sketchy college apartment.
It was, totally.
Which was really apropos. Like, I actually felt that was kind of a bonus. You know what
they
I mean?
They should advertise their Airbnb. Sketchy college apartment, only $87 a night.
Yeah. And hey, on alumni weekend, $87 a night, I'll take it. I wonder what it is regularly, $23 a night or something.
Right.
We'll pay you.
Come stay in our sketchy college apartment.
This place looks like it was partitioned off from a slightly bigger apartment by somebody with absolutely no DIY skills and about 30 minutes to spare and a bad attitude.
Did you see the post on the city post on the front door that was telling them to stop construction?
Yeah.
Like the official city, like...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was sketchy.
Like, no one knew how to do drywall clearly, so they made a ceiling by screwing siding on with, like, Phillips
so
head
bad.
Screws. And just like painting it sorta.
Oh
like,
my god.
It was amazing. But you know yeah. what? To get to wake up in a sketchy Somerville apartment, two blocks from campus, like we went to Dunk's each morning
fun.
For a bagel and some
it
espresso.
It was so fun.
It was really, really, really fun.
Yeah.
Right by Davis Square, like halfway between campus and Davis Square, which was just like that's how I used to live. And so to really get to immersively be back in it like
it was
that
great.
Was really nifty.
Yeah.
Yeah,
super fun.
I'm glad you had that experience too. And I'm also glad that you felt that kind of familial thing immediately with my people like I did and like I remember having done because like that's the vibe with that group. That's what characterized my experience
it's
when
cool.
I was a kid. And I'm so glad that you felt that.
Y'all are lucky.
Yeah,
and me
right.
too, that I get to sort of attach myself to it all these years later.
That's it. That's it.
Yeah.
It's super cool. And now Andy too, like the group grows.
Yeah, it's yep. really cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. So
break time.
What do you think? We could take a little break here.
And then we're going to preview some songs.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess there'll probably be some break music going under this. It'll just kind of end. But here's the deal. If you want to hear the new songs off of Shannon's record, you should get yourself into the Misfit Stars group. Go to misfitstars.com, click on that second big pink button, get signed up. Because this thing that you're hearing right now is going to end, but then there's going to be this whole other thing.
There's
going to
be more.
Where we debut songs, and it's going to be magical.
All right.
So excited. So hey, we will see those of you who are members after the break.
Cool.